We're taping this podcast from Concordia in New York City. Welcome to my guest, Jane Harmon, former Congresswoman from California. Jane now heads Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars. Welcome, Jane. First question, I almost know the answer to this before I ask it. Does anything keep you up at night?
Well, I always think that sleep is overrated, so I can think of a lot of things I'd rather do. But the world is increasingly complicated and increasingly dangerous. And we're in New York City right now where this plot to explode some IEDs in trash cans is being investigated. The president's about to talk about it. And there's an emergency alert for at least one identified plotter who is an Afghan-born, naturalized U.S. citizen who they think was responsible for this.
They did get him, though, didn't they?
Well, I don't know. I haven't heard that.
We heard that a few minutes ago.
Well, good. Good for the NYPD and all the law enforcement resources here. New York is better protected than any place else, and I like that because most of my kids and grandkids live here.
But not in California.
Not in California. I have four kids. One kid and his family live in Los Angeles, and the others live here.
Well, more of mine live out there than yours.
Well, yours have a lot of, they have good judgment.
I have four and two of them live out there.
Okay.
So, but we recently have gone through a deal on cyber issues, and I'm clean, know this, because I'm so old, and I still am on a yellow pad. So I don't email. So when the cyber experts, when they looked at ours, said you're the only person we've seen in a long time that can say that. But do you have concerns about cyber invasion?
Big time. I think we've seen that both governments and rogue actors are very competent at breaking into government systems as well as private systems in this country. All you have to think about is Sony. That's one
You know, that was the first one, wasn't it, kind of, that we knew about?
Well, it wasn't the first one, but that was North Korea retaliating against Sony because it produced a movie that North Korea didn't like, but that shows you the capability of a tiny little country where most of the people are starving. But more recently, we've seen the Russians, or at least most people credit the Russians. Our government hasn't declared that they know it's the Russians, but I think it's likely that the Russians hacked into computers of the Democratic National Committee and other
political computers. I could not believe that. I couldn't believe that they... it's almost like, why are you doing that? Why are you coming into our political system?
Well, that's really worrisome. The election is November 8th, 50 days from now. Who could miss that? And we don't have good cyber hygiene across our political parties. I mean, pick any state, a local political office of either party, my guess is, doesn't protect its computers well enough. Five states have computer voting with no paper backup. I think one of them is Pennsylvania, which is a battleground state. And if the result of the election is contested the way it was in 2000, and Pennsylvania is the swing, and Pennsylvania's ballots are invalidated because someone thinks the machines were tampered with, we got a problem.
We do have a problem, if that happens.
If that happens.
Yeah, we do have a problem.
I hope it doesn't happen, and a lot of effort's being made to prevent that, but I'm saying that cyber hygiene is something that we could all do better, except for you, but most of us don't have enough yellow pads to get our business done.
It's kind of embarrassing, but in a way it looks like I may have been clever to not involve myself to where I could be hacked. You're involved in the presidential debates. You're on the committee, right?
I'm on the Presidential Debates Commission, which is a nonpartisan group that helps structure the debates.
Kind of give us an insight. What do you think on the debates?
Well, of course, we all agreed not to do that, but you just saw the public decision of the Debates Commission only to allow two candidates, Trump and Clinton, to debate because third-party challengers have not reached a threshold of 15% according to five national polls. And we reached that decision unanimously, and I think it's the right decision.
Well, now that we've got the right decision, that's good. Why are you laughing? We both wonder about some of the decisions, I'm sure. Can you talk about it?
Well, how's it going to go?
Yeah.
Well, I think we can all speculate on that. A lot of attention's been paid to moderators in the debate, and there was criticism of Matt Lauer for doing these sequential programs with Clinton and Trump on a aircraft carrier a couple of weeks ago. But I have a lot of sympathy for debate moderators. I don't think they're the ones who were responsible for making sure that everything that's said is true. I think the candidates have to point it out about each other. And
think Matt Lauer was fair?
Well, the allegation is he was easier on Trump than he was on Clinton. I thought he asked a lot of good questions. And so I don't know how to say he was fair or he was not fair, but some of the things that Trump said in particular need some fact-checking. And I hope that in these debates, the first one is a week from today, the candidates will be on their game and they'll point out factually if one or the other says something that's not accurate. Because I think voters want to know what the truth
is. But I agree with you. It should be checking each other.
Right.
Yeah. But it's going to be at Hofstra.
Right.
Are you going to be there?
I'm going to be there.
I don't even know. It's in New York State. Hofstra
is. It's on Long Island. It's not that far from here. And I think a lot of people will tune in. I don't know what the expected audience is. But I think a lot of people want to see those two candidates face to face.
Oh, I do too. I think they will.
You going to watch?
Oh, sure. Oh, yeah, I'll watch. Even if it's late.
Well, it's going to be late. It's going to be 9 p.m. Eastern time. I don't know where you're going to be, but that's so that everyone in the country can watch it.
I will be in Texas. So it'll be 8 o'clock Texas time.
You can manage that. Young person like you, you'll be up.
Just a kid. I can manage it, sure. You're a liberal, I'm a conservative. But that's so important in this country. I mean, we've got to have two parties, or we don't have much of anything. I saw Hamilton last night.
Did you like it?
Yeah, it was good. I did like it very much.
I think it's very educational. I think the music is gorgeous. But the audiences are learning about our history, which is wonderful.
The audience was into it last night. They applauded numerous times during the show. So they knew what it was all about, and they were following closely. And the seats were not cheap, so I think they got their money's worth. Jane, do you have any questions for me?
Well, I'm not sure you're right that one party's liberal and one party's conservative. I would argue that both of our political parties haven't been paying enough attention to the anger in the country about globalization and people dislocated by trade. I'm for trade, but I think each party has a more liberal and a more conservative wing, or a more moderate and a more extreme wing, depending on how you want to call it. And that there has been a consensus in the country, more or less in the middle for a long time, about how things should work. But now both edges are not happy with that. And I think Trump is reflecting the anger in parts of the Republican Party, and Sanders reflected the anger in parts of the Democratic Party. And what worries me is that if we withdraw from the world and we say, all trade is bad. I don't know that we'll get to that point. What are we going to do? Flip burgers for each other? Who's going to have the money to buy the burger?
We can't. We can't get away from trade. You've got to have trade.
I think so.
I mean, well, sure you do. So, and it's. But we also know that we've moved a lot of our manufacturing offshore. I don't like that.
I would love manufacturing to come back. In fact, the trend recently is that some of it is coming back, and that's a good thing.
But that gets over to my expertise, which is energy.
Mm-hmm.
And we have the cheapest energy in the world in the United States. Did you know that?
I actually did know that, and I know that we can now be a net energy exporter because we're so good at this. If you think of North America as a platform, Mexico, U.S., and Canada, we can be absolutely energy independent.
Talking about North America.
Yeah, which is a first for a long time. And I think that's good for U.S. security. It's good for the U.S. economy. I also think a challenge, because we understand about climate change, is to move to some cleaner fuels. And that's why I was excited when you told me that you're on the board of a clean energy company that's in the natural gas business. Good
you
for
won't you. Believe it, but the environmental group, Ted Turner, is very much involved uh-huh. with it. But they gave me an award a year ago as an
Good.
Environmentalist. The first time I spoke to them 4 years ago, they booed me.
Yeah.
So I came a long way, or they thought I did, in 4 years, but I did get recognized as an environmentalist. But the fossil fuels are going to have to be used. There's no question about it. I mean, you cannot cut off over time. Yes, it can happen. But it's not going to be anything that's going to happen soon, because you're using 95 million barrels of oil every day in the world.
I hear you, but we can also drive new markets for cleaner fuels. For example, this was something I tried to do in Congress over my 9 terms, was to urge the Pentagon, which has the largest fleet of vehicles, they're not all cars and buses, but fleet of everything, to move to flex fuels or cleaner fuels.
What would be those fuels?
Well, I don't. What about natural gas? What about biomass? I don't know enough about. I'm not the world's expert on this.
They'll
stuff.
Both work. There's no question about.
So.
Work. Well, when you say though natural gas, I'm glad to hear you say that, because natural gas is a fossil fuel.
Right, but it's a much cleaner fuel.
And no question, it is cleaner, but it's but to go to the battery, I don't have any problem with that. I mean, if that's the best fuel, but the market will dictate that. If you have a better fuel that comes from a battery that and it surpasses something else as fossil fuels, that will, I think that...
So I have a question for you. You asked me if I had a question. What do you think of a carbon tax?
Well, tell me why.
Because that creates a market incentive to move to other fuels. If there's a tax on carbon. Carbon is also viewed by most people, and you, again, know a lot more than I do, as a huge pollutant. And so if you create an incentive to move off of dirty fuels to clean fuels, the market will respond. It's not telling what else to do, but it's saying this will be more expensive.
It'll be an incentive to, you're saying, to alternative fuels.
Yeah.
If you put a carbon tax. It gives them a better opportunity.
And it's also predictable. If you're a business owner, which you are, you know what it's going to cost you, and you can plan. And fuel is less expensive now, so a carbon tax would have less impact. It would cause less hardship, but it would be a market driver for cleaner fuels.
Well, there's no question we've looked at a carbon tax,
mm-hmm.
and it was unsuccessful. You couldn't get it passed.
Well, so far that's right. That's exactly right.
But when you do any tax that I see, it's going to tax the consumer.
Well, that's an issue. I mean, if you put an increased tax on gasoline, it taxes the consumer. So you have to, at least I think so, think about the hardship cases and people who have to commute long distances and have a lot less money. But if the goal is to save the planet and move us to cleaner fuels, then you have to figure out what are the right market drivers.
If you're going to go to the cleaner fuels, natural gas has to be included.
Okay, I agree.
Because today, the Cummins engine, Cummins has developed an engine that, believe it or not, is 90% cleaner on NOx emissions than anything we've ever had.
Wow, good.
I know, it's a game changer.
Well,
it has to be understood and then integrated into the market and all. But I'm not totally opposed to a carbon tax.
Mm-hmm.
And I would talk about it and realize that, once again, I'm being repetitious, but somebody has to pay for every tax.
Right.
And I think the consumer does in this regard. But there may be an argument for a carbon tax. But
I think we're making news here.
Well, you and I could probably sit down as a liberal and conservative, and I say it honestly. I mean, we'd sit down and talk about some things and come to some conclusions.
That's what's not happening. People don't talk to each other anymore.
I agree with you.
Blame each other.
I agree with
you. It's a dysfunctional political system.
It is, and now I hate it where that, you know, the Democrats, they vote together, and if one of them doesn't vote, you know, if they aren't, if it isn't a, and it's the same thing on the other side of the aisle.
That's
I'm
right.
not saying the Democrats are different than the Republicans. You know, but if you don't vote, if you vote where you think it's the right thing to do, something that should happen, and you, and you're not allowed to do it, or you'll be penalized by your party, bad deal.
It wasn't that long ago where that was what people did. I remember being in Congress and voting for the 1997 balanced budget. It was overwhelmingly popular, and years of prosperity followed. And I don't think we can do that anymore, which is a tragedy.
Oh,
hopefully, we'll
balanced
get back
budget.
To it.
I'm 100% and always have been for a balanced budget.
Well,
it makes all the sense in the world.
Sure
you don't
does.
Run a business without balancing.
Well,
the budget.
I think the first task for our new president, whoever she or he maybe, is to figure out a way to work with Congress and change the broken business model of Congress. And that is doable. Presidential leadership matters. Lyndon Johnson understood how to do it. Ronald Reagan understood how to do it. But we seem to have lost our way.
When did you depart Congress?
I left 5 years ago to head the Wilson Center. I was there for 9 terms. Why did I leave? Well, I got a better offer. I mean, it was a great honor to serve in Congress, but the toxic partisanship is really immobilizing. And at the Wilson Center, we're nonpartisan, and we have a platform for free conversation and discourse, and everybody wants to come and talk at the Wilson Center, Democrats and Republicans, and talk to each other at the Wilson Center.
Well, you can't be in 2 places at one time, but I do wish you were back in the Congress. Jane, thank you for being
on. Thank you, Boone. This is fun.
It was fun. Thank you.